How do you express the unthinkable?
I was sitting in class. Four blocks north of Ground Zero.
An excerpt from Steve Reich's WTC 9/11, commissioned and performed by the Kronos Quartet, just released on iTunes today. One of several classical pieces that's tried to come to grips with 9/11 through music in the last 10 years. Boston Globe classical music critic Jeremy Eichler calls them monuments in sound. He joins us to listen to them. And Jeremy, it's often excruciating, but thanks so much for helping us do this.
Thanks for having me.
Let's look at Reich's piece, WTC 9/11. Tell us more about what you hear here as we listen.
They came from Boston on an airline, and I heard it sound.
This is what I think will be one of the more powerful examples of a composer responding to the events of 9/11. What he's doing is he took sampled interviews with various people who were involved with the response to the attack, firemen, rescue workers, neighbors from the WTC neighborhood, and he is using their voices as the basis for the musical material of the piece. So you'll hear the air traffic controller in that first phrase is saying they came from Boston, and they're using the intonation that the controller is using. Reich is taking that and making that the basis of those opening phrases of music.
Yeah.
So he starts weaving those aspects together into something that's very powerful.
The bodies were moved to large tents on the east side of Manhattan.
Very powerful, but musically, is it documentary? Is it, you know, to me, those things, the voices, they are music to me. They're like musical notes. But is that really considered music by critics like you?
Absolutely. I mean, this is now we're in the land of contemporary classical music, which has its own sort of aspirations and sets of values. But I think that one thing that's so powerful about WTC 9/11 is you have an example where as Reich puts it, the documentary reality and the artistic reality of the piece are the same thing. All of the music is generated from this documentary reality that he's gone to find.
Well, and that brings us to John Adams' Pulitzer Prize-winning piece on the transmigration of souls. He wrote this a year after 9/11, and at the beginning, there's no music at all. A recording from Lauren Mazel and the New York Philharmonic of John Adams on the transmigration of souls. He worried about writing this. You quote from his memoirs, you know, to try to bring 9/11, this unbelievable event, to music, he was a little worried about what?
Well, that he could say anything that wouldn't be, in plain and simple terms, an embarrassment. One thing that I think is interesting is that you have, in a way, a completely opposite approach to what Reich is doing in his piece. Adams is going about trying to really create what he's calling a memory space as opposed to a piece of concert music. The Reich sort of comes at you like a juggernaut and really, you know, hits you hard in that sense. And Adams is looking to use the orchestra and the chorus in a way that almost opens up. He had the image of a cathedral in mind, that walking into a cathedral and that feeling of there being old souls somehow around you and a sense of being alone with your own thoughts. In a way, a frame, a musical frame that would place itself around a listener's own memories of the day.
Do you think he succeeds?
I think he does in those terms. I think that for me, as someone who was in New York on the day of the attacks, I found it very powerful to listen to that piece after not having heard it for about 5 or 6 years. I found myself confronting a flood of memories that I think are triggered subtly and less subtly by that piece.
Well, in particular, the reading of the names of the victims. Let's listen to that.
Frederick Gabler. Betsy Martinez, my sister. Mariela Vash, my mother.
I mean, that's just, it kills me.
Yeah, I mean, and what a lot of the texts in this piece are actually taken from those missing person shrines that popped up, and walking around the city in the weeks afterwards, these signs stayed up, and of course they were heartbreaking.
Just hearing names without music is so powerful. So you can understand that fear of adding the music to something that's already so powerful. But then there's the question, when are you mining someone else's grief for your work? Was that one of your questions?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there are two things that are important. One is to not make the mistake of taking on the tragedy face on, that these things are all too enormous to just, you know, gulp down and try to offer back to us in a piece of music. I think the successful memorial works are approaching their subjects either in part just taking a small piece of the event, or in some way from an indirect angle they're approaching them obliquely. And then the other aspect is just pieces that avoid these kinds of facile narratives of redemption, the sense that we can take the victim's suffering and turn it into, you know, beautiful art. And at the end of the day, in John Adams' piece, I feel that there is an emptiness at the core of this piece. It's almost like he has composed a void.
Mm.
And I think, given the subject matter, that there's something appropriate about that.
Yeah, sometimes discomfort is what you need in these songs. You're nodding yes. But then there's another approach entirely, which would seem to be the one taken by composer Jan Swofford. His piece, They That Mourn, he began writing it just as 9/11 happened, completed it the following winter. Tell us more about this piece.
Yeah, in a way, this is a more traditional memorial piece in the sense that it's an abstract piece of music. There's no vocal writing at all. It's just for piano trio, so piano, violin, and cello. It is a 21st century composer responding to clearly a very sad and disturbing event. The piece sort of runs through the whole gamut of emotions, but it does so in a way that doesn't put any of the 9/11 context at all in front of you. So listening to it, you really wouldn't know if this was a personal tragedy he was responding to or something obviously public that affected many more people.
And Jan Swofford's They That Mourn is performed here by the Omega Trio in March of 2010. Well, Jeremy Eichler, you say one of the functions of these pieces is to let people experience 9/11 without any of the political partisanship that can sometimes go along with, you know, talking about events like that. What do you mean by that?
They give you a place to intersect with your own personal memory, the public memory of this event that's somehow free of that politicization. I mean, these composers don't have an agenda. They're not trying to get you to vote one way or another on the war on terror. This is music that's very intentionally grappling with this task of public memory.
Jeremy Eichler talking about some of the classical music that came in response to the attacks of 9/11. He's a Boston Globe music critic. We'll link you to his writing and to the music we've been talking about at hereandnow.org. Jeremy, thanks as always.
Thanks so much for having me.